Hey, To The Point listeners, I want to make sure you are all aware that September is Suicide Prevention Month. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. If you've ever had to endure the horrible loss to suicide or even attempted suicide, as I have, then you know the pit it leaves in your stomach, and especially because it could have been prevented. So I want to share some warning signs with you of those who might be considering suicide or thinking about suicide. And that's people talking about wanting to die or kill themselves, or talking about feeling hopeless or having no purpose. Maybe they're feeling trapped or having unbearable pain. Talk about being a burden, excessive alcohol use or drug use, acting anxious and agitated, sleeping too much or too little, withdrawing, maybe the opposite in showing rage is another thing, or seeking revenge, or just displaying those extreme mood swings are something you should all be on the lookout for. Now, if you know of someone or you suspect someone, I would encourage you to reach out to them and have an honest conversation. Be bold and talk to them in private and listen to their story. Tell them you care about them. Ask directly if they're thinking about suicide or have thought about it, and then encourage some sort of treatment. You know, avoid debating the value of life or minimizing their problems or giving advice if you have to, and simply just encourage them to seek treatment or contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255, or connect with me, your boy Chris. I'd be happy to sit and listen with them and talk to them. And thanks again to our listeners for always tuning in every week. I'm so incredibly grateful. And go and spread the word. We love you.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, the host of To The Point Home Services Podcast, Chris Yano, along with my co-host who was here when we originally started recording, but now it appears that he is no longer here. So I don't even have a co-host today. There he is. I see him walking around the background unprepared like Tall Paul typically is. Hey, Tall Paul, welcome to the show, buddy. Glad you could make it. You're on mute. Come on, rookie. We've almost done 100 episodes. Mute. We are almost done 100 episodes, and you missed the introduction. And you're on mute. Come on.
Hold on. You did the introduction already?
Yeah. We're already in it. We're live in the podcast right now.
No way.
100%.
Get out of here.
Yep. So welcome. Well, hey, everyone.
I'm not even here to defend myself.
You weren't. You just disappeared. That's very unprofessional of you. You know what? And you're better than that.
I had to put the dog up.
Oh, okay. So you must be at home. All right, listen, I'm going to get into it because Paul's already derailing the show and ruining it. And we have a very special guest on that we don't want to ruin the show. I want to give him as much time as possible to speak. I was so incredibly excited that we finally got Terry booked on the podcast to share some of his experience. And like we were saying pre-podcast, I've heard about this gentleman for a lot of years. And there's a lot of crossover, yet we've never met. We've never officially met until today. And I am excited for him to share his story, some of our mutual connections. This guy is arguably another legend in the industry, along with some of the others that we've had on the podcast too. And I'm excited to have Mr. Terry Nicholson on the podcast, who's currently the Chief Success Officer of Praxis S10. But my goodness, success is probably a perfect title for you, Terry, because you've had quite a bit of it over the years. But welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you.
Well, thanks for having me. And I feel like such a disadvantage because I don't have any cool headsets on, no big microphone like you all. So I guess I'm going to have to up my game next time. I wasn't aware I needed all these cool toys.
All the tools of the trade.
It's just to look cool. It's all just for perception. Okay.
They're not even plugged in.
They're not even really plugged in. Yeah, right. Your audio sounds great. You look great. You wouldn't want to ruin that bald head anyway with a pair of headphones. It looks too cool. My bald head, I shaved it during COVID because I did one of those COVID haircuts, and it still is ugly. It's been ugly the first time I did it when I was in high school, and it's ugly again when I shaved it this time. So I hope I never lose my hair. I'm going to wear a hat always. But hey, Terry, listen, a couple quick things before we get into some of the questions and letting our audience know kind of a little bit of your history. And typically what I would do is share a little bit of what your history is, but yours is so elaborate and so cool that I don't want to miss anything. So I'm going to have you kind of share some of that in the beginning. But first, I want to say, when I was doing a little bit of research just on when we were having you on, I saw a couple of things that stood out to me. It appears that you might be a little bit of a hockey fan. Is that true?
That would be an accurate assessment.
Now, it also might be, I mean, there's a couple of, you probably have a couple of athletes that might be your favorite. Is that a fair assessment too?
That's probably a fair assessment as well.
do you want to share who those athletes are?
I am not one of them.
Well, when it comes to hockey, I guess my favorite player right now kind of flies a little below the radar scale, and I'm not sure exactly why, because I think he drives the success of the Lightning, and that would be Braden Point. So I'm a big Braden Point fan for the Lightning, and I'm fortunate that I have two teams, and I spent most of my adult life in St. Louis. So I'm a St. Louis Blues fan on the west side, and I'm a Tampa Bay Lightning fan on the east side. And obviously I live here in Sarasota, Florida, so I'm a season ticket holder with the Lightning. And obviously I get to see them a lot more than I do the Blues, but it was a great time to see the Blues win the Stanley Cup in 2019. And then the Lightning the last 2 years. So last I'm able to say my favorite team has won the Stanley Cup the last 3 years in a row.
It seems like you might be their good luck charm.
Yeah, let's go with that.
And let's normalize having a couple of favorite teams. I'm okay with that,
oh,
too.
Oh, boy.
One from the AFC, one from the NFC. That way you always have something to root for. Chris, you should consider a second favorite football team.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and stick with my Arizona Cardinals. But, yes, I do love the Indianapolis Colts because I'm from Indianapolis, or I'm from outskirts of Indianapolis. But, no. Colts play the Cardinals. The Cardinals win. That's there you go. I'm going to leave it at that. And I say that because I'm flying to Nashville to go watch – my Cardinals open up against the Tennessee Titans. So I'm excited for that. I leave in, tomorrow. I leave tomorrow. I'm going to be in Nashville tomorrow, Terry.
Well, good for you.
Well, you know what? Hockey never caught on in Indiana. We have the Indianapolis Ice, which is like our, minor league hockey team. I remember going to a couple games, but listen, Indiana's all about basketball and racing. So hockey was never even really on my radar, nor was rugby. What's the one with the nets? With the little sticks in the net. Lacrosse. Good grief. But I loved watching lacrosse because out here in Arizona, we had a professional team, Arizona Sting, and I loved those guys would just beat each other up. And that was pretty fun to watch. The defenders, or whatever, I forget what they're called on defense, but those guys, I feel like their only job was just to light people up, and that was fun to watch. And that's what I loved about hockey. It's hard to really cheer loud for hockey out here in Arizona, Terry, with the Coyotes. It's a little difficult.
Yeah, but didn't one of the greatest players come from that part of the country? Didn't Austin Matthews come from out that direction?
That's true. That's true. Good point.
Ice
in Arizona. What do you know? Well, hey, real quick. You, speaking of chief success officer, now didn't you, I know you probably share a little bit of this in the intro about who you are and kind of your history, but didn't you, I think if I read this correctly, in 06, did you create or were the co-founder of Roofers Success International? Do I got my years right? 06, 07, somewhere around that time frame.
Well, I think the year is right. Definitely was a co-founder of Roofers Success International. I'm not sure of the exact year, but that sounds about right.
Got it. I thought I read that too. So which is a part of SGI. And also the electrical side you did as well. But I think it was before roofing you did the Electrical Success International. Is that correct?
That would be accurate as well. And started that with my friend Patrick Kennedy.
Got it.
Who is just one of the greatest human beings you ever want to meet. And he recently passed away. And obviously, I still think of him every week.
Yeah. So I saw that was very recently, wasn't it? Was that?
Yes, I believe it was December of last year.
Okay, that's right. Okay,
I'm wearing that.
Well, I didn't mean to bring us down there. Holy moly! I was just trying.
Thanks for doing that. I appreciate that.
We're off to a great start. Maybe we should just go. Hey, here's actually something let's go ahead and lift this thing back up. didn't you just recently have an anniversary?
Man, you're digging deep. Yes, I've been married 60. Yeah, 60 years and 30 apiece.
60 years.
30 for her, 30 for me, but that's 60, right?
Oh my gosh. Counts. Hey, congratulations. That is awesome. I love when I read stuff like that just because, you know, sometimes it's so easy for people to give up, you know, and I bet you that's been a really easy time, right? Like you probably never had any disagreements or anything like that, right?
Well, I'm sure it's been easier for me than it has been her. So she's obviously a saint to tolerate me.
Okay. See, that was better. That was great. See, we're on the right track. We're on the right path now. Okay. So let's go ahead and jump into this. Go ahead and let our listeners know. And listeners, listen, you got to tune it. You got to really turn up the volume on this one. Pay attention, take notes, do whatever you need to do, because I just have a feeling this is going to be an extra special episode and Terry's going to drop some knowledge and wisdom.
There you go.
I got beat up for saying tips and tricks by Michael E. Gerber. Literally, and he was sitting in this chair beating me up for saying tips and tricks. But Terry's not going to bring just tips and tricks. He's bringing knowledge and wisdom to the podcast, and I'm excited for him to share it. So, Terry, let's go ahead, if you would, and just share kind of how you got into the trades and then your path through the trades to where you're at today with Praxis S10. Is that cool?
Okay. Going to take me down memory lane.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay. Outstanding. I got to tell about one job before I got into the trade, so it'll tie it together and it'll make sense. But have you all heard of a gentleman by the name of Tom Hopkins, internationally known sales trainer?
I think I've heard that name before. Yeah.
Okay. And so anyway, I started out my career and I was a young man working for Tom Hopkins, Results Tom Hopkins. And basically what Tom Hopkins would do is he would go to a city like a rock star and do his big event sales training program. But behind the scenes, guys like me and my team, we would show up 8 to 12 weeks before, and we would go out and conduct these mini training programs. And if our mini training program went extremely well, people would line up and give us checks and credit cards. Yes, that's how long ago it was. People used to actually write checks. And when they wrote a check and gave it to us, we would give them a ticket, and that would get them in to see Tom Hopkins. And we'd show up at the big event and rah, rah, rock star, hope you guys feel great and you know how to sell now. And then we would move on to the next city. Now, occasionally, people would get so excited at the program that they'd say, we want to hire Tom Hopkins to come in and do a custom training program designed specifically for just our organization. And then they would call up and they'd find out how much it was. And this actually happened. And the guy said, you got someone smaller that'll pay a little bit less to come in and do a custom program for us? Well, when you wanted to pay less than Tom and you didn't want to pay for the big guy, you got the little guy. And that
was me. You were the consolation prize, Terry?
Yeah, I'm the consolation prize. And I think it's my stature because, you know, I stand 4'18" and a commanding presence out there. And the guy who called me to do this training program was a guy you probably have heard of. He's been around the industry for a long time, was Joe Cunningham.
And oh, yeah.
Joe Cunningham?
Oh, yeah. Joe was just on a few
legendary.
Weeks ago.
Legendary.
Love Joe.
Okay. Well, see, it's a small world this
it
in.
It really is. Unbelievable.
And Joe Cunningham was working for Carrier, and he had a program called the Texas Tough Program just for Carrier dealers. And he wanted me to come in and put together this custom training program for the Carrier Tough Dealer Program. So that's what I did. And at the end of the day, they were happy and Joe was happy and Joe paid me. So I'm happy. Everyone's doing well. It's a great day. And I don't hear from Joe. And so anyway, in that position of working for Results Tom Hopkins, I lived on the road almost all the time. In fact, the first 2 years I worked there, I didn't have an apartment. I didn't have a house. I lived literally 100% on the road.
Wow.
And that was my first 2 years. But then I moved in, became a VP of sales and marketing. So I still traveled, but I would leave Sunday night, got home Friday night. And I came home Friday night, and my lovely wife is in bed rest, or she's in the bed. She's pregnant with twins. I am proud to say that I was in town when she got pregnant, though. I just want that clear on the record, all right?
Wait a second.
That was amazing.
So, nobody set you up to say that, did they?
Zero. That was an amazing, amazing delivery, by the way. I just want to call that out. Well done. The show is yours, my friend.
Okay, excellent. And so she's laying there in bed and she's crying and she's telling me, I'm confined to the last 3 months for bed rest and you're never going to leave that job. You love that job more than you do me. And I'm going to be raising these two twins by myself. And, you know, she's crying. I just couldn't handle it. So I got back on a plane, flew back to Dallas and resigned in person and said, I love you guys, but I just can't keep doing this anymore. So I moved back to St. Louis. Well, that's where my wife lived. And so I didn't live there very much.
And you were there every once in a while.
Yeah. And so anyway, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I'd been in 100 or 200 different industries doing training. So I'd seen almost every type of sales organization you could possibly see. But what I did love is I love training. So I started my own training company. And so I'm doing training in St. Louis. And about 2 years after that date, I get a call from Joe Cunningham. And he says, hey, I'm working for a company called Future University. It's located in Chesterfield. It's owned by Jim Abrams. And I didn't know who Jim Abrams was. I didn't know what Future University was. And he said, I'd like to catch up with you. And I said, hey, Joe, how did you get my number? And you talk about fate or destiny or just meant to be. Joe said, well, even though I work in St. Louis, I commute back and forth from Houston because he lived in the Houston area. And he was sitting at a bar, a Dave and Buster's actually at a bar, and he starts talking to the guy next to him. And somehow or another conversation came up, Tom Hopkins. And Joe said, you know, I used to know this little bald guy who used to work for Tom Hopkins. You know, I don't remember his name, but, you know, and the guy said, well, that's Terry. He's the guy who hired me to work for Tom Hopkins. And yeah, I know where he's at. He's in St. Louis. And Joe goes, I work in St. Louis. So Joe That's got cool. the number from this guy. So you talk about a fluke out of all the bars in Houston that he meets the guy who knows me that has my number.
That's meant to be. And,
yeah. And so I go out, I meet with Joe, and I don't know what Joe wants, but he's an old client. And I always enjoyed Joe. You know, he always had his big black cowboy hat on and cowboy boots and his, you know, big buckle. I kept telling him he needed a 5-gallon hat, but he said he liked the cowboy hat. But anyway, I show up and what he wants is he's building a bigger training team and he wants to hire me as one of the trainers. And I say, hey, Joe, thanks. No, thanks. I'm doing my own thing. Happy about it. And that was it. Appreciate you thinking of me. 6 months later, he calls me back again. I go back out, visit with him, and he just put a few more pepperonis on the pizza and wanted to pay me a little more money. And I said, thanks. No, thanks, Joe. I'm happy. I'm going to keep doing my own thing. And about 3 months later, he calls me again. And I just say, hey, Joe, I'm not going to go to work for you. And he said, just come out and visit with me. I'm like, okay. So I went out. I think he stiffed me for lunch at that time, by the way. But, and that's Joe, you know, he's a good guy. He's a funny guy. You know, he's got to be one of the funniest guys in HVAC, a quote and one liner, as you probably know.
His podcast.
We didn't know that was coming.
Yeah,
by
it
the
was
way.
Hilarious. Yep.
We'd never met him and he showed up on the podcast and just completely blew us away. It was amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. He's a great guy and he'd give you the shirt off his back. He's just an all around great down to earth, you know, guy. Loves his horses, as you probably know.
Yep.
But anyway, when I went back out that time, he said, look, Terry, I'm not going to hire you. You don't want to be hired. And I said, no, I don't. And he said, how about I hire you for 1 week out of the month? And I said, can I pick my 1 week? And he goes, you can pick your 1 week and I'll pay you X. And I said, let me get this right. You're going to hire me 1 week out of the month. I get to choose which week I go and you're going to pay me X. And then I asked the important question. If you don't resell me back to the membership or whoever you want me to go train and see, do I still get paid anyway? He goes, absolutely. And I go, okay, I got to get clearance from Karen and I can go out and travel a week out of the month. Let me go get clearance. If so, I'm in. And I got clearance. And so I went to work. And that's when I learned the real value of Terry and learned a very valuable lesson because Joe marked me up double what he was paying me. Okay? And I went, good for Joe, you know, but he helped me recognize the value that I had. So I started going out doing training and representing, you know, Future University, which was owned by Jim Abrams, who also owned a company called Contractor Success Group. And then I had the big opportunity to go to the national convention. And I knew Jim and Jim knew me because he wrote me a check every time I did training programs. But I didn't really know Jim, other than I would recognize him, but I never had the opportunity to sit down. So even though I'd been working there for months, I never really had sat down and visited with him. It was always through Joe. And I'm at this national meeting where all these contractors are out here in the audience, watching Jim up here on stage.
What year is this, by the way?
What's that?
What year is this?
It was 93, 94. Okay. I mean,
gotcha.
When you go back this long, it's,
that's close enough.
Close enough.
Sorry.
And so I was just in awe of this man walking back and forth up here, educating people. And I can't tell you how I recognized it, but I did. I recognized that he was going to build a national company. And I was inspired and I was excited. And, you know, I told you I had seen 200 plus different industries, but nothing got me as excited as watching him that day. And I finally got the nerve up at one of the afternoon breaks. Right when he went on break, I rushed up to the corner of the stage. He went to walk down the stairs. I grab a hold of the rails, meaning you got to walk over me or you got to talk to me. And he stopped and I said, "Hey, Jim, you got a moment?" And he said, "Breaks are for clients. Meet me out hall in the hall 10 minutes after we start back up." I went, okay. So, you know, and I didn't want to be late. So the minute the break ended, I went out in the hall and waited for Jim to come out. And he told me where to go. And there were two chairs, a couch, coffee table. So I'm sitting at one of these chairs and he comes out just walking really fast. And he's not much for chit chat. His first answer was, or reply was, "What's up?" That was his, and I'm like, wow, let's warm up a little bit, Jim. Now, what's up? And I said, "You're building a national company. I can recognize that. I don't want to be a part of it." And he didn't confirm it, and he didn't deny it, which to me meant he was confirming it,
right. Yep.
And he said, "If you want to be in this industry and you want to be something important to this organization, you need to go learn the business like I learned the business, and start at the ground floor and become a salesperson and sell heating, air conditioning equipment." And even though I was doing training, it wasn't training specific on the HVAC world. And I don't actually think he thought I would do it. And so the convention ended on Saturday. On Monday, I went down to his, he had three locations in the day. And one of those happened to be located in Chesterfield. So, and not, he didn't work out of the Chesterfield. He worked up on top of the hill out of the CSG office. So I walked into the location there, met the general manager. I knew who the general manager was because all the events, I mean, I knew basically everyone. And I sat down with the general manager and I tell him that I want to go to work for you selling heating and air conditioning equipment. And he wouldn't hire me. And I'm like, baffled. And I'm, you know, and Highway 40 runs through Chesterfield Valley there. There's probably 70,000 cars that go by. And I still remember going, there's 70,000 cars that pass that interstate every day. I said, "I've worked for the nation's number one sales trainer. I know how to train. I know how to sell. I'm willing to work on straight commission. How many times does anyone drive by Highway 70 or Highway 40 with that qualification, walk in and say, 'I want to go to work for you'?" And he goes, "Well, it's never happened." And I said, "Well, I'm your first guy. Don't let this opportunity pass you." And he goes, "You know how much a lead costs?" I said, "I don't know." And he goes, $250. I take a $250 risk every time I give you a lead. I'm just not going to hire you. I'm not willing to take that risk." And I'm like totally confused on that because I just can't believe the demand for, you know, salespeople is so great. He gets to be picky in this industry. And I ask a few questions and I said, basically, you know, who is in charge of Jim's three locations? And he told me the name of the individual. And I said, "Does he work out of this office by any chance?" And he said, "Yeah, he does." And there were only two offices up front there. And I said, "Is that his office over there by any chance?" And he said, "Yes." And before the S even got out of his mouth, I'd already stood up and was heading out the door over the across the hall. And he goes, "But you can't go in there without a point." And by that time, I was already knocking on the door. And the guy was in, and I walked in and sat down. And I told him what I wanted to accomplish. And about 15 minutes later, and I know he's wrong, I know it was immature, but I went back over to the general manager's door, knocked on his door again, and I said, "Looks like you and I are going to be working together."
Double thumbs up for the Double listeners. Up.
And so the VP obviously over trumped the general manager, and yep. It was wrong. And he wasn't overly excited about that. So anyway, I go to work selling heating, air conditioning equipment. And I'm proud to say, you know, I had some success there, even though I didn't really know what I was doing. I mean, my first week in the business, I sold a fuel efficient or 80% fuel efficient electric furnace. I mean, that's pretty good, right? And I know you have a lot of people that may not be in the heating air conditioning world. That furnace doesn't exist. But you know what? Homeowners didn't know it either. And what I had sold was comfort. And I had shared with them, hey, if it's 95 degrees outside and you have your thermostat set at 75 degrees, if you go to that thermostat setting, it will be within plus or minus 1 degree, worst case scenario. On a minus 10 degree day, if your thermostat set at 70, it'll be within plus or minus 1 degree of that 70 degree temperature. Worst case scenario. If it's not, we'll modify it, we'll repair it, we'll replace it, including putting a new one if we have to. In fact, we're so confident in what we do, we'll give you 365 days to determine whether that achieves that type of comfort. You think you'd know within 365 days? And usually the homeowner would say, well, we'll probably know the first day it gets hot. Then that'd give you the peace of mind to move forward today, wouldn't it? And I just nod my head and their head would start nodding. And pretty soon it was press hard four copies. All right. But for our audience out there, I think so many people get hung up on all this technical stuff when really, you know, people are still investing comfort.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp, deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
That's what they want. And so even though I didn't understand all the mechanics and inner workings of heating, air conditioning, I understood people, I understood what they really wanted, became somewhat successful at selling heating, air conditioning equipment. And it was a great blessing for me because, and I'm not telling you that Jim Abrams taught this method. I'm just telling you the people who taught me the method of how to make in-home sales in HVAC. I would go in, I'd have this wonderful relationship and we're laughing, we're having a good time. And then when we'd come down to the end, they'd start having these objections. And I'd overcome one, another one come up. I'd overcome one, another one come up. And pretty soon, you're in one of these boxing matches. Let's see who has more objections or more closes. And I absolutely hated it. I mean, I felt like I was breaking people's arms. But I also understood if I didn't make the sale, that I wasn't going to eat tonight. And so I said to myself, there has to be a better way. And I started applying the principles, that selling principles I'd learned from Tom Hopkins. And, you know, you ask the questions, you find out what people want, you eliminate, you close doors as you walk down the hall, all that stuff both you guys know. And what came of that was this friendly, I guess, in today's world, a lot of people would call it consulting selling, but really I just called it asking the questions, find out what people want. I mean, I'm a pretty sophisticated individual, find out what people want, right? And make sure you leave them to what they want. And it became a really simple process for me. But more importantly, the reason why I shared that wasn't about my success, because keep in mind, I was there for a bigger purpose, a bigger reason. What it allowed me to do was to build training programs that were duplicatable by any type of person who wanted to succeed. And where before, you know, they used to say timid salespeople have skinny kids. Well, we could actually take timid people and we could actually teach them a friendly, non-combative, just ask these questions. When you get this answer, lead them over this way. And you can eliminate all the objections before they even come up. And at the end, there's really only one thing left to do. And that's, where do I authorize? And it just became a friendly way to move heating, air conditioning equipment. And at the time, and I know I'm dating myself, but back in those days, how I really initially got famous was I established myself as the maker of million-dollar salespeople, and that's what I was known for. No one had trained more million-dollar sales producers than anyone in this industry other than me. And I say that because today, selling $1 million is nothing in today's world because of the inflation and price increases, et cetera. But back in those days, it was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And when you looked at our organization, we had an organization of clients, and virtually everyone had million-dollar salespeople following this system. Yeah. So, but that's how I got recognized, but it's not how I really grabbed Jim Abrams' attention, which, do we have time? You want me to keep going?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Jim and his business partner, John Young at the time, they were always visionaries looking at what's the new product, what are things that people, consumers want, and they introduced indoor air quality. And to my knowledge, they were the first people who really jumped on. Now, this was in the early 90s, keep in mind. And they started talking about HIPAA filtration. They started talking about activated oxygen, UV lights. And in fact, we started, they actually bought a distributorship and started using that distributorship to give products to just our members. Or I shouldn't say give, our members had to buy it, but it was set up purely to serve the members of Contractor Success Group. We had this product, but not a lot of people were adopting it, including Jim's own company-owned locations that he personally owned. And so now Jim makes the announcement that he's going to form a publicly traded company. And so now it's been publicly announced. And remember, I came there because my vision was I wanted to be a part of building this national company. And so I sent Jim a proposal and a game plan on here's how we can introduce indoor air quality to every company and how we can spread the success, which would not only benefit your distributorship of the product, but it would help the success and profitability of the dealer, but it would also help many homeowners who do not even understand this product exists that can help them with their allergies and the filth and the, you know, all the stuff, you know, indoor air quality does. And guess what he did with that proposal? Okay. No guesses.
No guesses.
In the trash. Okay.
Wow. Go figure.
Didn't even reply to me. And I had personally went by and dropped it off, but he wouldn't, you know, I couldn't get to him. And they're like, Jim says he's busy, leave it. So they give it to him. So I call him 3 or 4 times and he ignores me, doesn't answer me. So finally I went, I got to grab his attention. So here's what I'm going to do. Now, keep in mind, I'm now doing training for Contractor Success Group. I'm running leads for his company. I'm still selling replacement equipment. I went back to the same general manager who didn't want to hire me. And, you know, I look back on it. I say, yeah, I was pretty immature. But I walked in and I said, I got good news for you and I got bad news for you. And I go, which one you want first? And he goes, give me the bad news. And I said, the bad news is I'm no longer a replacement salesperson and I'm not going to run any replacement leads anymore. And he was kind of devastated there because I was a contributor now. And yeah, now he had recognized that that was going to be a big hit to his revenue stream that he was going to have to replace now. And I said, the good news is I'm your indoor air quality specialist now. And his immediate answer was, I got no money. I'm not spending any money on indoor air quality. I don't understand it. I don't know enough about it. I'm not sure anyone wants that crap anyway. That was his answer. And I said, well, the good news is I'm not asking you for any money. What I am asking for is a little flexibility, and you're going to be the beneficiary of it. All I want is I want to visit with your technicians, and I want to visit with your call takers and dispatchers. So give me free access to those people. And what he had already forgotten is he had a duck cleaning ad in the Yellow Pages. So that shows you how old and long this was. And people would call off the duck cleaning ad, and the ladies at the front desk would try to sell it. And I said, how often does that work? And they said, not very often. And I said, well, I've been given permission to take over and build the indoor air quality. And he didn't really know what I was doing. He didn't really care because he figured Terry's going to do whatever he wants anyway. He's going to go around my back anyway. So he figured he might as well go with me this time. And so what I instructed was I went to the technicians and I taught them how to set leads. Then I went to the call takers and I said, here's what I want you to do from now on. If I'm here, make sure and get the phone to me. If I'm not here, then don't tell them anything other than take their name, their telephone number, and tell them the indoor air quality specialist will call them back. So that's what I did. And I started running duct cleaning leads, which we were trying to sell over the phone. In the first 9 months of the year, we'd sell something like $36,000 total company-wide of this stuff. And in the next 30 days in that month, I sold over $40,000 of indoor air quality, which I don't think had ever been done at that time. Now, it's pretty deceptive. And the reason why is the first 2 weeks, I didn't sell anything because I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
You're learning.
It took me about 2 weeks to hone it out, build the presentation, fine tune it, figure out what people were going to say, build that into a presentation. And so really the 40 grand came from really about 10 days of work. And I even went out and installed two jobs just because I wanted to make sure that I completed my manual properly and had a indoor air quality checklist installation procedure. And to do that, I obviously had to be a duct cleaner for 2 days, which, you know, I'm glad I did it. I wouldn't do it again today, I don't think. But anyway, Jim gets his financial because he is a financial guy, and he sees, okay, 9 months, 36,000, 1 month, 40,000. And he calls down the general manager. He said, what the heck are you guys doing? Now, you can kind of imagine his embarrassment of the general manager because he said, I don't really know. He goes, what do you mean you don't know? Well, that's all Terry. Well, what's he doing? I don't know. He hadn't told me. And he's like, well, tell him to come and see me immediately when he gets in.
He's got time for you now.
So I got in, I drive up the hill 3 miles. I go in, I sit down with him. And, you know, I was kind of intimidated because he's sitting behind this great big hardwood desk that's huge, you know, and he's setting me in a little Yeti low rider chair. And I'm just kidding. It felt like that because he's such a big overpowering individual there and his presence really.
What's your age gap between you and Jim at this time?
Now you're asking me tough questions. He is approximately 17 years older than I.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So you're not necessarily peers. So there's some authority there. Okay. Yeah. I'm just setting the stage. I want to be in the room.
Okay. And so anyway, he asked me, he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm helping find people who have allergies and asthma and filth in their home, get happily involved in solutions that help them breathe and live a happier, cleaner life. And he asked me that like 3 or 4 times. And I said that like 3 or 4 times. And I won't tell him the answer. And I think that was the very first time that I earned his respect because I wouldn't tell him what I was doing.
Yep.
And he basically recognized this guy now has knowledge that I don't have. And he brings substance to the game. And I said, I've already written a game plan on it. And I know, and see, by now we've already announced the date that we're going public. And I said, I know we've got the date we're going public. I want to be the first national sales trainer of the first publicly traded company. And basically Jim respected me because he realized I knew stuff that he didn't know. And I basically said, you're not getting it unless you hire me. And Jim kind of laughed and he said, well, I can push it through, but I've told all these guys that I'm going to keep overhead low. And all these guys were the 13 members of Contractor Success Group that had already signed the paperwork that they're going to sell their business all on one day and form the first publicly traded company in, you know, the world of heating and air conditioning anyway. And so he said, we have one last meeting before the day we go public. I'll give you 10 minutes. And in that 10 minutes, you get to give your presentation on why you should be hired because you're going to be overhead and they're going to look at you as overhead. So you better give a good presentation if you want to get hired. And I give you 10 minutes and that's it. And then we'll take a vote at the end of the day on whether you get to be corporate overhead or not. So I went in and I gave my presentation for 10 minutes and I had a whole game plan put together. And, you know, I have found the shorter the presentation, the more skillful it has to be.
Oh, yeah.
And you actually have to present and prepare more time. So I knew exactly every word I was going to say. I had it rehearsed down to a science. And I even remember my closing remark. And my closing remark was the first time I've ever said this, and it's now become one of Terry's signatures. And so no one on this podcast tried to take it because it's copyrighted in 7 different countries. Okay, I couldn't resist the Ricky Bobby.
I'm on the edge of my seat, Terry.
All right, so I had this, and I don't remember the exact amount of profit that I had figured out that it would produce on an annual basis, but I think it was around the $12, $13 million line. And my final closing statement was I had showed them how we were going to do this, and it was going to contribute $12 million of profit to the company. And you know what I say? Every extra $12 million of profit helps.
Slightly.
And they all busted up laughing. And Jim walks up laughing, and you know, he's like, great presentation. Appreciate it, Terry. We'll be back in touch. Thanks for popping by. And Jim goes to prepare something. I walk the back of the room, and I just sat down. And Jim continues on with his lesson. I'm starting to hear stuff I'm probably not supposed to hear. And about 5 minutes into it, he stops and he looks straight at me and he goes, Terry, get out of the room. This is private. And I go, I thought I was already on the team, Jim. And everyone started laughing again. They're turning around. I'm walking out the door. And so I'm waving at him. So now I had him laughing twice. And he's up there shaking his head when the door closes. So that's how I got his attention. I became the national sales trainer for service experts. So I did implement the indoor air quality, continued doing the training, building $1 million salespeople. And then I actually moved into handling trouble centers. Sometimes we buy a location and the owner would ride off into the sun and the person that they put in charge wasn't quite capable. So I would go there and troubleshoot, help turn those centers around. I eventually was assigned a general management role on one troubled center. And then I became an area VP. And then I finally got back to the sales training side of it, which is what I loved and where I wanted to be. But I did whatever needed to do to build a successful company. So that was my service experts days. And in that time period, Jim actually had retired and rode off into the sun. And about a year and a half after being retired, he got tired of being retired. And one of our mutual acquaintances calls me up one day and says, hey, now I'm still at Service Experts and I've got a great job there, great income, stock options, growing company, excited. I work out of my house 2 weeks out of the month, travel the other 2 weeks. I kind of really get to do my own thing. And the individual calls me up and says, I believe Jim's starting another business and he'd probably like to talk to you. So I gave Jim a call and sure enough, Jim was starting another business. And that business was called Clockwork Home Services. And it was going to launch the very first endeavor. When I went in and sat down with him, I said, what are we going to do? You're non-competed in the heating and air conditioning world. And he said, we're going to build a plumbing organization. And I still remember going, what do we know about plumbing, Jim? And he said, well, nothing. But he said, we do understand business. And the business of operating a contracting company is the same, whether it's plumbing, whether it's electrical, roofing, HVAC, or fill in the gap. We understand business. But he said, don't worry. We're going to get Mike Diamond to be our operational guru. Now, at the time, now, are you guys familiar with Mike Diamond?
I am.
I am not.
I am.
Okay. Mike Diamond at the time was the largest residential service plumber in North America by far, out in the huge West Coast LA area. All right. And I was just so impressed that Jim said, we are going to get Mike Diamond. Now, Mike hadn't agreed to this, but Jim just said, we're going to get him to be on our team. And I said, okay. So, you know, so let me make sure I understand this endeavor, Jim. Okay. So I get to take a pay cut. I get to walk away from my health benefits, my stock options, and go back on the road traveling again. And we're going to build in an industry where we know nothing about, predicated on getting Mike Diamond on the board. Do I have that right? And he goes, yeah, you got it right. And I go, okay,
I'm in.
But one caveat, you got to convince my wife that it's safe for me to come to work here.
Karen.
And so I literally sent Karen to go visit with him. And as he puts it, and I wasn't there, so I don't really know. He said she interrogated him. And finally, she got to the question and said, what type of income can he make? Where will he go? And so Jim started talking about partnership and how if this was successful, the other businesses we were going to build. And then he came back and he asked the closing question on Karen and said, now he's going to be on the road a bunch if he takes this. And she said, well, what's the income he could make again? And he answered, and she said, if he can make that, you can have him every night this year.
Back on the road.
That's what Jim said anyway. So
how were the boys that time?
Well, one boy, one girl.
Oh, one boy, one girl. Okay. So you had twins.
I had the best of both worlds. So in 99, they would have been 5 years old.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm trying to get some context of age of the kids.
Almost five. Got it. Okay. Right in that time frame. Maybe five. Now you're asking me tough questions.
Sorry.
I got my shoes on, guys. I can't add when I got my shoes on. I need all my fingers on my toes.
I just taught one of my children that last week, by the way.
Okay. So anyway, we launched Plumber Success International because that was successful. We then started Airtime 500 when our non-competes ended. Then we did form Electrician Success International, Roofer Success International. And then we actually started recognizing the power of branding. Now, we knew it for years. But, you know, back in those days, if you ask a person, name a good cup of coffee, they're probably going to say Starbucks. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want a fresh sandwich, where would you go? Subway. You know, if you want, you know, a FedEx, or I just gave it away, overnight package, you'd say FedEx. So it's this branding. And Jim said, we're going to build for those contractors who believe that branding wins the day, then we're going to build a brand. So that was the birth of 1 hour heat and air conditioning. That was the birth of Benjamin Franklin Plumbing. That was the birth of Mr. Sparky Electric. And we also built Successware. Now, we acquired Successware, but we needed to acquire it because there were certain principles we wanted to implement in our business that we needed to develop. And if we owned the company, we could get the developers to develop what we wanted them to develop. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
We also created BIMAX, which was the industry's first and largest buying organization. Yeah. We also had Future University. And I'm missing, or not Future, Success Academy. There we go. And I'm missing something, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, and we started building, now it came to me, we started operating our own plumbing, heating, air conditioning companies as well. So we built 11 what we call business services companies, which they all served independent contractors. And then we also had our company-owned locations over here where we got up to, we were doing roughly $220-some million of residential service business, just like our clients, and saying, hey, look, every system we teach you, we're using our business. Come and see it in action. So it was kind of humorous on the organizational chart. One day, Jim and I were planning and plotting and scheming, and he was kind of running roughshod over me, and I went, hey, Jim, look at our organizational chart. You're president over here on operations. I'm president over here on the consumer business side. We're peers. Quit being so rough on me. And then he pulled out another organizational chart and he says, look at this one. I'm CEO of the overall company. So he big timed me. What can you say? So we had a good laugh on that day. And so, you know, in a 9-year span, which I might add, was to my knowledge, the 10-year worst economic time. I mean, we had two wars, first terrorist attack on America's soil. We had a financial meltdown in 2007. So not a very good time to build a business. And yet we built 11 consumer businesses. I think we had 18 other company-owned operations. And we went from a startup company to 1,200 plus employees. And so we're operating that business. And then in 2010, really the end of 2009, and keep in mind, economy's still a little unstable, right? Not sure where we're heading, right, at that point in time. Direct Energy approached Jim and said, we'd like to buy Clockwork Home Services. And Jim said, the company's not for sale. And they said, well, we got $170 million. And Jim said, well, maybe the company is for sale.
It's funny how that works out.
And we ended up selling the company for $183 million. And you know what I say? Every $183 million.
Hell.
Right. Hey, and that's trademark seven countries property.
I'm going to add an alternate ending to that quote that you can trademark. This is my gift for you donating, one, the history lesson, but two, your time today. So you can say this, you know, Jim, every $183 million makes a difference to a company. The question is, Jim, is it going to be your company or am I going to take it to another company?
I like your style, Paul.
Which company, right, Jim?
And so guess what Jim does after we sell the company?
Takes a vacation.
He retires on me again. I mean, you start to see a bad habit here, aren't you? And I tell everyone, Jim's still got hair. He's 74 years old and he's still got hair. And I'm like, you can see who does all the work around here.
Good point.
And it's not true because he's really the smart one. I've just been very fortunate to you know, be in the right place, the right time to earn his mentorship and get accepted as a friend and business partner in his endeavors. But anyway, I agreed to stay with Direct Energy for 2 years, became their chief innovation officer. And after 2 years, I said, you know, guys, it's been fun, but you don't really need me in this role. And so I'd like to go on and do my own thing now. And so I left, and Jim and I were having lunch, and I said, Jim, what are you doing? He goes, I'm bored out of my mind. And I said, well, I'm too young to retire, so why don't we start another business? So we started another business, and we didn't even know what we were going to do. So we started the search on what's going to be our next business opportunity. And we, by fluke, ran into an individual that owned a physical therapy company, and it was a better than average physical therapy company. And I'm sure you guys can see the connection between HVAC and physical therapy.
Clear as mud. So we said, clear as mud.
We said, yeah. Let's start a physical therapy franchise. So we went out, we actually acquired a percentage of that individual's business so we could learn the business, but we could also start developing a new model for the industry. Because for HVAC guys or plumbers, electricians that think they got it tough, you don't have it tough. The medical profession has it tough. Yeah. If you've ever had any type of physical therapy before, what you get paid in 2021, the exact same service is less than what they got paid in 2012. Jeez. That's how difficult the business is of physical therapy. But it taught us a lot about productivity, which is a big portion of our program. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people teach productivity today. So we implemented this new model. It had a profound impact on the healthcare of consumers. It had a profound impact on the physical therapy business owners. And it's since become the fastest growing franchise in healthcare. It's got 400 plus locations across the United States. And if you ever need physical therapy, it's FYZICAL, spelled different because we are different. Physical Therapy and Balance Centers. And
is brought to you by.
And we played in the private equity world in 2017. We got 51% of our business was acquired. They wanted their own management team in place, which was really a blessing because that gave me the opportunity to get back to what I wanted to be in, which is heating, air conditioning, plumbing, electrical contractors.
Come home.
Now I'm back home.
Welcome home, Terry.
And so now I'm on the sideline with physical going, go boys, go.
That's right.
Keep growing, and I'm over here working with heating, air conditioning, plumbing, electricians. All right.
Does it feel good to be back?
Oh yeah, I love this industry, and you know, as you were talking off the air, you know, I still have so many friends in this business, and even though I was out, that's actually one of the reasons why I got back in. Is there were still people calling me, asking me for advice, asking me for help, and the demand was there.
Hey, I want to name drop real quick a couple people that have worked with you who, who've been on the podcast. So a few of them, one you already know, but Dave Geiger from Horizon, has been on a couple times. Leland Smith, Service Champions. Ken Goodrich is basically trying to take over the podcast, but he, Kenny Haynes.
Yes.
And then the guy I've never talked to is Jimmy Hiller. Those are all guys who have worked and trained with you, right, Terry?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, I know all those guys. I mean, you know, it's a small world, but, and once again, I'm not claiming their success.
Sure.
They did the work. They did it, but I'd like to think that I contributed part of their success. You know, I think I met Dave Geiger when he was already a plumber, but he was just getting into the HVAC business. So he became a client to learn how to do HVAC. I believe Ken Goodrich, when I first met him, was doing $1 million in plumbing. He was a plumber, believe it or not, and was only $1 million in revenue. In fact, I think somewhere in my office here. Oh, yeah, I do.
This is great.
Hold on a minute.
I'm waiting.
Walking over to the file. Okay, this is amazing.
I got this in the early 2000s, and I know you can't see this, but it was a e-postcard, and I'd never seen an e-postcard before. So, Ken, if you're listening, you were high-tech back then. And he sent me this picture of a Porsche, thinking me what a great year and the lessons that he had learned. And he went out and got him something special that year and just wanted to give thanks. So I've kept that around here for years, and I use it for inspiration to show other people what they can accomplish and be as well. So Ken's been a great inspiration. And Leland, of course, is the nicest, most humble, and you know, sly, very, very smart. Super so sharp. He comes across as he doesn't know very much.
Kentucky boy.
But he is very, very smart. I think he was probably $1.5 million, mostly a plumbing guy when we started working with him as well. And God. Ken Haynes, yeah, I, you know, he hangs out some here in Sarasota, so we catch up from time to time to visit. And so I think my connection with Ken Haynes is, if, and I may not have all the facts right here, but he had a business partner in his Cool Ray business by the name of Tom Wells. And Tom Wells was actually our business partner in a business in Indianapolis that we ended up eventually acquiring as well. And so which, by the way,
was a client of mine, which has helped boosted me into the HVAC and plumbing space back in the day. Well, I know the same.
Okay. So yeah, I know all those guys, all great guys, you know, great attributes, and wonderful to have them in the industry.
Well, that's awesome. So for sure, Goodrich is going to hear this. I'll be with him next week. We're flying into Service World Expo. Actually, it's cool. I get a ride on Air Gettle. I'm excited to fly in with him. I know that means he's got another agenda. That's why I'm really flying with him, because he has me trapped for 2 hours or 2.5 hours, whatever it's going to be. So we'll see what that is. But yeah, it's exciting to hear that you've worked with so many of these guys that I have so much respect for. And all these guys, I don't know if you've heard of this or not too, but Paul, while Terry was sharing some of his history, I was thinking, we got to get him to Rhino X. We got to get him to absolutely. Rhino X. So Terry, I'll kind of share some of what that is with you afterwards. I hope that you're okay. I'm just going to go ahead and set the stage. This has clearly got to be a two-parter, and I'm good with it, because I think the story and the history was absolutely worth it. We did the same thing with Dave Geiger, and kind of his story, where we talked about some of his history. And then we went into part two, which was starting to drill into some of the questions and takeaways and things like that. Terry, are you okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay,
I mean,
perfect.
It's your show. I'm just playing in your world, Chris.
I just want to make sure you got time. You got time. So
it's just fascinating to hear, you know, as you look back over the last 20 or 30 years, the significance and where people were and where they are now. It makes me wonder, as you look around it, you know, we know people and we have clients and we have friends who are just hitting $1 million. And you think, well, that person's not going to be the next Dave Geiger, the next Ken Goodrich, but they are. So not to jump too far ahead here, but when we look back 30 years from now, who are the Jim Abrams of this era, if that's even defined yet? Is history made, right? Because I ask that question because Jim's name comes up all the time, right? By some of the biggest and most influential people. 30 years from now, who are some of those names? Maybe rattle off. If we even know, it might be too soon.
Well, believe it or not, my crystal ball is not guaranteed to be 100% perfect. But if I had to guess, and keep in mind, those people we just talked about are obviously industry leaders today, and they're probably the best at the way the business is. And I put Jimmy Hiller in that conversation as well. Mm-hmm. But they're still operating a business, and I'm not telling you that they haven't honed in and perfected and improved and put their own twist, because they have. All right. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, they're still really doing the core principles that Jim Abrams and John Young laid out for them. All right. So if I had to guess, I would say the next Jim Abrams is not in the industry today. Yeah. I think it's going to be from someone coming from the outside that is just going to have a unique concept. They're going to think entirely different. They're going to be entirely different. And they're going to bring a new concept, a new way of doing business. And that's the person that's going to be the next Jim Abrams.
Interesting.
I like it. So when to kind of summarize, we've heard a lot about Jim and kind of your relationship and your story as it's interwoven. What was it about him that made him stand out? Why is he part of everyone's story? What characteristics does Jim have that made him so special and remarkable in our industry?
Well, I think we'd have to say his vision. He had the ability to look out into the future and take his company to the future before the future was actually here. And I think he understood that every contractor and everyone tuned in today, you really have two choices in life. Change is inevitable. It's going to happen. So you get to make the choice. Are you going to let someone else drive the change? And are you going to be constantly responding and reacting to it? Or are you going to drive the change? And Jim was always a proponent of, I know it's coming. I might as well lead the change because at least I could take the industry where I want to take it. And I use this as an example of his visionary status because, you know, everyone today, we recognize and know the value of a club membership. And I don't think many people would dispute the importance of that.
Right.
But when you look back in 1981, Jim Abrams started a business from scratch in St. Louis, Missouri. And there's only two reasons he went to St. Louis, Missouri to start this company. He said, it gets hot in the summertime, it gets cold in the winter. If I'm going to be in heat and air conditioning, I might as well go where it's hot and cold. And that was his only reason. He didn't know anyone there. He had been there a time or two. But other than that, that was his whole purpose, is it was hot and it's cold. And so he goes there, and in the first 90 days, he goes to one of these local ACCA meetings, and he said back then, now I wasn't there, but the way he told me the story is he said, pretty rough group of characters back in the 80s if you were in heating and air conditioning. He said at these meetings that were held at night, he said there's a lot of drinking going on, a lot of big cigars, a lot of smoke. He said you had to fight your way through the smoke just to get to your chair. And at this one particular meeting, his first one that he's attending, the topic was every person was expected to go up to the podium and spend a couple of minutes talking about how you're going to grow your business. Now, he's a brand new guy, a brand new startup company, and he goes up to the podium and he doesn't know most of these guys. He's the only guy with a sports coat and a tie on, and they're making fun of him because most of them are in a technician uniform. You're in the wrong meeting. And then he starts talking about, I'm going to build a Christmas tree farm. And one guy even yelled out and said, Jim, the Christmas tree meeting's down at the other hotel. This is an air conditioning meeting. And Jim just kind of laughed and said, well, on a Christmas tree, you have these rolls of treats. And he said, in 1 year, these trees are going to be big enough to sell. And I'm going to chop them all down, take them to market and sell it. And then I'm going to plant a new row. And then the next year, I'm going to chop down this row and plant a new row. And I'm going to do that. And he went out to like 5 years. And he said, then by then, the row I planted first is going to be ready to be harvested again. And they said, get to the point, Jim. And Jim went, my Christmas tree farm is a club membership-based business. Now, in 1981, that was state-of-the-art cutting edge. And I'm not saying he was the only guy doing it, but I am telling you, he is the only guy who actively promoted it and went out and made a concerted effort to do that. And one of the guys in the room who's kind of like the godfather of ACCA in St. Louis, he took his cigar out of his mouth and went, hell, Jim, you can't make any money selling maintenance agreements. I'll give you my maintenance customers.
Oh, boy.
And Jim, wow, being smart like he was, he went, you all heard it, and I accept. Thank you very much. And for 2 years, that guy gave him his maintenance customers, and this startup business in 2 years surpassed the size of revenue as that guy's business, who'd been in business 30 plus years. And that guy came to him in year two and said, hey, Jim, I know I told you I'd give my maintenance customers, but I can't do that anymore.
I messed up.
And Jim went on to be the first guy to build 10,000 service agreements in 1980s, Dang. In the early 80s. And most companies don't have 10,000 service agreements today.
Right.
Now, is there any coincidence that that led him to go on to build the largest residential service company in North America? I think there's probably a direct correlation to that.
Say so.
And did it change everything for everyone? I would argue that it did. He saw the future.
I would say for the successful individuals, there's still a lot of people don't believe in club memberships, right. And, yeah, you know, but for the successful guys, I think all of them adapted it, but I still wouldn't even say that was just one example of vision, but I don't think that's Jim's biggest contribution to the industry. Do we have time to share that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I think the biggest contribution to the industry and, you know, I know Chris, you had shared, you'd been in the business, I think 14 years, Paul, right. How about you?
About the same, yeah.
Okay, so that is, if my math still is right, that's, you know, 2000 and some towards the mid 2000. Mm-hmm.
Well, yep.
or us old timers like me that have been around, and I know there's some people who've been around longer, in the 90s, up until Jim formed Service Experts, if you wanted to exit your business and retire, you really only had three options. Option one is, and a lot of people did this, they locked the door, they turned the lights out, they put a thanks for your business, retired up, and they sold their parts, tools, trucks for 10, 20, 30 cents on the dollar of asset value. That was one of the options. The second option was a fortunate few had a son or a daughter, and they enslaved that son or daughter into the business. And they said, we're going to give you the business, and you worked for me, so I know that you don't have any money, but I'm going to give you the business when I die, and I'll put it in my will. But what I need you to do is I'm going to stay on the payroll, and you're going to write me a check every month to earn the right to own this business, but you're totally in charge. I'm not going to show up. I'm going to go fishing or do whatever I want to do. Now, can you imagine the compromising position that that put the son or daughter in? I mean, every month when they go to write mom or dad a check, they like write it and go, when's that old man going to die? You know, some of them probably were even tempted to go out and hire a hitman and knock mom and dad off, right? So that was the second way. And the third way, which was very common, was, you know, you couldn't sell the business, so you found your best loyal employee and you said, I'll sell you the business to you and I'll own or finance it. And more times than not, that guy would bankrupt that business within 2 years and default on their note. And that's the way people exited this business. And Jim's whole purpose behind creating Service Experts, and a lot of people don't understand that. If you weren't within our organization, you didn't understand the purpose. They just saw it as being a big business and, you know, he's disrupting the industry because this is a family-run industry. And that's the exact purpose on why Jim was doing it, is because Jim understood that if you owned a car dealer in your local community, you'd work 10, 20, 30 years and you'd sell it for millions of dollars. And yet a heating air conditioning company, you know, they're providing air, plumbing, electrical. They're providing a service that's much more valuable than any automobile. And he said, you ought to be able to exit your business after building 20, 30 years of this for wealth. And so he said, I'm going to form this opportunity where if you want to sell your business, you can keep working for the next 6, 7, 8, 10 years of your life, or you can get paid that in 1 year and right off into the sun. And that is the guy who created this wealthy exit strategy. And then, and not a lot of people know this, but ARS, and sorry, I just had to move this bottle. It moved over to the edge and was rocking, about to fall off bottle. Over here. I'm not going to tell you what the bottle was, but anyway, where was I? ARS followed our model and duplicated and tried to duplicate it, but they didn't understand that we had 6 years of development in order to form Service Experts. So they went to marketplace and they had a false start and failed on performance and, you know, the window of opportunity closed. So see, younger people think this business that you've always been able to sell your business for wealth, and not really. You only had that 3 year window from 96 to 99, and then it closed again. In 2004, when we started our branding initiative with 1 hour Ben Franklin and Mr. Sparky, we opened that window again, but you couldn't sell your business then for anything in the trades. And we said, we're so confident in our brand, we're so confident in our systems, our procedures. If you invest and follow what we're asking you to do, we're going to buy businesses. And we already had a game plan. This is how much revenue we're going to buy per quarter. And if you have the brand, you have the systems, you have the accounting, you have the software in place, then you're in line to be acquired. So the window opened back up from 2004 to 2007. And then of course, in November of 2007, I believe it was, that's when the financial meltdown happened. It all came to an end again and the window was closed. And then in 2012, I think Dave probably was probably the first guy to bring private equity into the game. I don't know if he approached them or they approached it. Him, however it happened, but Dave was probably the guy who opened up the private equity. And a few people dabbled in it, but most people still didn't understand it from the private equity world. In 2015, they started paying attention. In 2017, they said, hey, if all these other guys could do it. And as you know, the last 3 years, it's been an acquisition feeding frenzy out here.
It's been insane.
But anybody who's exited their business for wealth, they have a great debt that they should owe to Jim Abrams, because without him forming service experts, nobody wanted to buy one of these heating, air conditioning companies, plumbing or electrical, until he formed that opportunity. That's to me been his biggest contribution to the industry.
So let's do this if you can, Terry. I think we're a little over an hour into this thing, and I do want to make it a two-parter.
Absolutely.
So, Terry, would you be willing to hop back on another one and let's finish up the back half of these questions? Are you okay with doing that?
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All this part right here that we're talking about will be cut out. So, because I'll cut it right after your Jim Abrams thing, and then I'll do an extra. So don't worry about this. But
this is so good.
Yeah, I think that that was fantastic. I love that we went down that whole path and that you went so deep and like micro into it that it helps set the whole stage for it. The good thing about this podcast, Terry, is that it's mainly HVAC, plumbing, electrical guys, and roofing starting to come on heavy, as I was noticing like Dave and some of my other guys buying roofing companies and seeing private equity get involved with it. So we're starting to gain some traction in roofing as well. But the vast majority of our listeners are HVAC, plumbing, electrical space. And that was a clinic on the history of the trades.
And we're sitting here humbled. I know Absolutely. Chris well enough. We're 2,000 miles apart. We're like, oh my gosh, this is such a story.
Yeah.
Like humbled.
And I'm grateful for your time. And I want you to make sure, that you know that that we are thankful that you took the time on this thing too. So me asking you to give me another hour, you know, on a separate episode, I know it was a big ask, but would you be willing to do that for us so we can finish this thing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I don't want to leave them hanging.
No
in the
way.
Middle.
Oh no, yeah, yeah. No. If it wasn't a meeting I had, I couldn't move, I would keep going, but I have a meeting in about 13 minutes. I cannot miss. So
In 13 minutes, I can't miss either, because we talk to our membership every Wednesday, Jimmy and I do.
Perfect.
And in 13 minutes, I'm going to be doing this again live with Jimmy.
There's not a chance that we're getting through the rest of these in 13 minutes. So I would much rather be more thoughtful, you know, about it, you know, give us a chance to cut there and then continue on. So what I will do is make sure that I get with Matt, or have my team get with Matt again to get you reset. But let's not wait too long if you can, because I like to roll if it's a two-part series, I don't want to roll them out too far apart.
Okay.
So within the next couple of weeks, if we can kind of get you rebooked, that would be great.
Yeah.
Does this always have to be a Wednesday?
You know, it doesn't always have to be a Wednesday. So if we need to make some adjustments, we can do it. We just have to plan ahead, because Wednesday's production day for us for the podcast, because I have a podcast team.
Okay.
But if we can get a date set and a time set, we can, and Paul can do it and I can do it, we'll make the adjustment.
Okay. And the only reason why I asked that is next week, I'm actually out of action. I'm actually going with some clients on a trip here. So I'm really out of action next week. And then the following week, we have new member launch on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So I could do something like on Friday, if that worked for you.
Yeah. So, I'm gone. So I think we'll get it figured out. So I'll have my team and Matt kind of work together and we'll find it.
Will you be at Service World Expo?
No, I'm not, because that's where we have our new member launch.
We'll get it figured out though. Within the next 2-3 weeks, as long as we get that, we'll be good. Cause I can record one week and then launch the next week. I know the team hates doing that, because obviously it puts a lot of pressure on them to get it done, but we don't want to have it like a month and a half apart. So, but we'll get it booked, and I appreciate it. This was amazing. I'm glad I finally got to meet you, Terry, and hear your story. I'm excited for part two as much as I'm excited for now, especially now that I just learned from your history lesson you gave us in the industry. I will say this, again, thank you, but I have so much respect for your boldness and like your the way that you approached you just keep going back to Jim and keep going back. Jim was almost like a driver for you, like getting to that spot with Jim Abrams seemed like it was a driver. You're like, okay, fine, I'll go do this. I love that you have that drive and that perseverance.
Well, there's no doubt there that I've been very fortunate, and that's why I'm, you know, indebted to Joe. You know, Joe's a great guy. My relationship with Joe is, you know, Joe's the one who made it possible to meet Jim Abrams.
Dude, Joe is awesome. He was a phenomenal guest. We got to get him up to speed on technology. Once we get him there, he's money. we were busting his chops.
Open invite.
All right. Hey, listen, I appreciate you, Terry. Thank you again so much. I know you have to prepare too, but I'm grateful and I look forward to part two. Hey, I appreciate you.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Terry.
Bye-bye.